Hey, this is Dominique, and if you're ready to do more with your life and money, I want you to stay tuned. Today, we're going to talk about a couple of implications from the new tax law that will help you to legally lower your tax liability. Stay tuned.
Are you tired of feeling like there's more to life that you're just not experiencing? Are you unmotivated by keeping up with the status quo? Are you ready to start living intentionally with your finances and creating the life you want? Get ready for Experiencing Financial Contentment with Dominique Henderson, a podcast focused on helping you create margin for the life you want to live by putting your money where your heart is. Each week, Dominique will help you explore the decisions you make around money so that you can achieve better results. Now, here's your host, Dominique Henderson.
Hey there, we're back. This is Dominique, owner and founder of DJH Capital Management, where we're helping our clients achieve their ideal financial outcome, and host of Experiencing Financial Contentment, the podcast where we talk about all things financial literacy, economic empowerment, and personal development to better you and help you win with your money. So if you're a repeat listener or a viewer, we appreciate you. And if you're new, we're going to help you take the red pill to leave the matrix of the average so you can win with your money. So today we're going to go a little nerdy and talk about some taxes. We just had the April 17th deadline pass where you're supposed to have your taxes filed or extended or whatever your choice was. And I wanted to talk about some implications from this new tax law. So we'll walk through some planning strategies, some things that actually came up in a client case not too long ago. And I'll give you an example of how we'll dig into my software, and I'll give you a tangible example of how you can lower your taxable income in light of some of these new implications. So hopefully that will be helpful for you today, and we'll bring it in for a landing after that, right? So I think a couple of things to kind of note is, the first is, before we get into everything, that tax planning, I view it as a comprehensive financial planner. I view it as a year-round thing. It's not something that you try to slam into the first quarter of the year, typically speaking, because my friends, financial or let's say CPAs and accounting and tax advisors, they're pretty busy during that period of time, as you well know, because if you work with one of them, it's pretty hard to get on their schedule. So, you know, at least my view is thinking of it from a macro standpoint, where it's top down and you think about the different strategies that you would employ in different parts of the year, depending on your situation. And hopefully we can get one or two times during the year that we pull that tax professional in to chime in or to, you know, kind of opine on your particular subject. So that's probably the best way to do it, instead of just, you know, dumping a bunch of receipts or folders of receipts on their desk in March. You know, they probably hate you, to say the least. So let's walk through a couple of things. There's really three planning points that came up in this previous case, and I want to give an example of how to use that. And the first one is, you know, to simplify things, what Congress did is the new tax law basically eliminates the personal exemption and increases the standard deduction. So previously, the standard deduction, I think, was $12,600 for married filing joint. And we'll use that example right now because that's what a lot of people are doing. At least that's what I do in my situation. So I'll give personal examples there. But that's been expanded to $24,000. And the personal exemption, which was $4,050 per person, is now eliminated. So, you know, you might start to think about, like, where these things appear on the tax return and what exactly does that mean? Well, we're going to walk through a Schedule A so you can kind of see. But basically, it means that if you don't have a itemized deductions more than $24,000, then you're just probably going to take the standard deduction. So let's look at where that falls, because we've talked about this before, but I want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. This is the tax formula. It's a little dated because it still has the line for personal exemptions, but you'll get to see where I'm going with this. So the goal is to take this taxable income number and reduce it as much as you can legally. Salary deferrals, like your 401k, HSA contributions, and all those things. And some of that we'll give you an example of a little bit later in this podcast. But that's the way to do it, so that anything that happens above the line, like they say, adjusted gross income, is your bang for, that's your most bang for buck. It's a dollar for dollar reduction in your taxable income. Anything that happens below your adjusted gross income, which is like an itemized deduction, that is not as much bang for your buck. You do not get a dollar for dollar deduction on that stuff. And so a lot of that has been really eliminated to reduce complexity, to be honest. Some of the schedules that have to be filed with the tax return, like the A, the B, the C, the D, things like that, it's designed to help with that particular process. So let's just walk through this formula real quick. So income from all sources, that's pretty self-explanatory. That's going to be everything on your W-2, your 1099, all your investment income, all that kind of stuff. Less exclusions, things with, if you sold a house, you know, your first X amount of gains, depending on your situation, $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're a married couple, those capital gains are excluded. Then that gets you to gross income, which then you can start deducting things like IRA deductions, if possible, moving expenses, you know, things of that nature. You can get a list of that. Just Google it. That gets you to your adjusted gross income. Your adjusted gross income then is further reduced by anything that is on your Schedule A as an itemized deduction. And so that's, it's kind of juxtaposed. Do I use Schedule A? If you have more than $24,000 in deductions, yes, you should. If you have less, then you just use the standard deduction because it's usually going to be higher. And then skip out the personal and dependency exemptions. That's gone away. That gives you your taxable income. That number is what goes to the IRS tables to figure out how much tax you owe how much tax you owe. Then the amount that has been withheld the whole year from your paycheck, or if you're self-employed, that you've been paying quarterly, that is used as a credit to reduce the amount you owe to either give you a refund or find out how much you're supposed to write a check to the IRS for. Now, my philosophy on my own personal one is that, you know, you should be trying to get that number as small as possible. Any money that you get as a refund really represents a tax-free loan that you've made to the government for about 12 months. And the opposite is true. So you want to try to reduce that as small as possible. So let's talk about some ways that can happen, because I just went over the fact that the standard deduction got reduced, right? So things like bunching your charitable contributions in years, instead of doing 15 and 15 a year, you may do 30 in 1 year so that it goes over that 24,000 standard deduction mark that we had. And that allow you to itemize and take a little bit more to reduce your tax bill and reduce your taxable income. Another thing you could do is with the sales and local tax, referred to as the SALT tax, in high tax states like New York and California and some others, you're capped at $10,000 of deductions. So if you pay $10,001 in sales and local tax, that $1 over $10,000 cannot be deducted anymore. I'll show you on the Schedule A where that appears. Matter of fact, let's go ahead and just go over there really quick. And so this is a behind the scenes, some of the nerdiness that the wizard uses to calculate tax liabilities. But in Schedule A, as you can see, this is your itemized deductions, right? So your sales and local tax would really be on line 5. Now, this number is going to be capped until 2025 per the new tax law at 10,000. So what happens when you go over that number? The question you may ask yourself is, how do I continue to find legal ways to reduce my taxable income? Great question. So let's walk through an example here. Let's say we have this hypothetical couple that is earning $300,000 together, right? $175,000 and $125,000, that's their salary. Now, if we were to look at their tax return now, and let's say they're maxing out their 401ks, right? There's some more low-hanging fruit that you can use to reduce your taxable income, to reduce your overall tax that you would have to pay. And so in this example, and I'm not gonna walk through all this, but they're reducing their taxable income by maxing out their salary deferrals. You can see the math of this is that they made $300,000, but you see $37,000 difference. Your income that is reported to the IRS is reduced by your salary deferrals if you're making pre-tax contributions to your 401k. That's why you wanna max that out. So you can see it's as if they made $263,000 because they maxed out their 401ks. 18.5 times 2 is your $37,000 right there. But how could you further reduce this before we get down to adjusted gross income? Because remember, the before the line or the above the line deductions are your biggest bang for your buck and how you reduce taxable income dollar for dollar. So in light of the new tax law, this is the way you can do that. And you can do this before the new tax law, but you just might want to do this now since, like I said, it's not as beneficial to have itemized deductions less than $24,000 because of the standard deduction being increased. So here you can see there's no health savings account deduction. So that's an obvious way. A health savings account, they likely in this, in all, they won't qualify for an IRA deduction, a deductible IRA contribution, because they make too much money. But here's all the things. Lines 23 through 35 actually, are what can be deducted depending on income. But let's go ahead and go for the low-hanging fruit of the health savings account, because in some cases, employers even encourage this by helping you contribute to the $6,900 max that there is for 2018. What they could do is they can make a maximum contribution to their HSA. Now, once we do that, we can flip back over here and see that we are reducing their adjusted gross income by another $6,900, which obviously reduced their tax, right? I didn't show you what their tax was before, but it was about $51,500. So another $1,000 in reduced taxable in reduced taxes happens when you make that full deduction. Now, somebody might naturally say, well, Dominique, why would I make a $6,900 contribution to an HSA only to get a $1,000 tax write-off? Well, you would do that for a lot of reasons. The first is an HSA stays with you wherever you go, right? So you leave that employer, you keep that account, and you can still use any proceeds in that account when they grow tax-free. You can use those as tax-free distributions to yourself to pay for medical expenses. You never pay tax on that money. So just think about what that looks like if you continue to do that year after year after year throughout a whole working career. You can really almost kind of self-fund your health policy in your later years. So that's the reason why you want to do that. It doesn't seem like a lot right now in this current tax year, but the cumulative result of doing that over time is pretty huge for you. And so that's the reason you would want to do it. And yes, it does give you a current tax break. So one other thing that I wanted to kind of point out is that the new tax law allows you to take your 529 and now use that for not only post-secondary expenses, college expenses, but also K-12. So K-12 expenses for private or religious education, as long as it's less than $10,000 a year, is something else you could do. Another thing you can do is you can make a dependent care contribution. So some employers allow for what is called a flexible spending account, and they allow you to put $5,000 in there pre-tax. That would reduce your that would be another thing that falls in line about where that HSA contribution goes. So there's tons of ways to do this. Obviously, everybody's situation is not the same. That's the reason why you want to pull in a tax advisor or somebody like myself that coordinates with your tax advisor to get you the biggest amount of deductions that you can to reduce your taxable income legally, and you pay less tax overall. So obviously this is not tax advice. It's not even really investment advice. I'm just sharing with you some strategies that you could employ in order to lower your tax bill legally. And if you want to continue this discussion, by all means, hit me up in the Facebook group. Call me 214-699-7599 extension 1. I'm also going to put a link to this software, which you can go in, register. It'll be under my firm, but it'll allow you to play with some of these scenarios if you want to do that, if you want to take it a step further and kind of chat about it and say, okay, Dominique, I really don't know what this means or what is the implication of this. By all means, we can schedule some time to kind of talk about that. So hopefully this has been helpful for you. We'll see you back next week. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.